Yay for recording. Woo, woo, woo.
It's really good singing, Matt. Are you practicing?
I am every day. I'm singing all around the house. My wife is ready to kill me. Not that she wasn't before. You know, the singing's not the cause of that. You know, just.
This is general madness.
Yep.
Understood. All right. You ready to go?
Ready.
Hi, everybody. This is The Simpsons Show. I'm Robbie with my co-host, Matt, and we are here to talk about The Simpsons from the beginning. Matt, how are you?
I'm wonderful. This show brings up very interesting memories. This episode, I should say.
Yeah, little yeah, young love, young relationships. It's
With people that are completely wrong for you because they're there.
Well, yep, we'll get into it. Hey guys, we are brought to you by our supporters on Patreon. You can support us by going to patreon.com/thesimpsonsshow. For $2 a month, you gain access to all of our bonus content. $5, you get the episode a little bit early, uncut, bunch of stuff on there. Definitely appreciate everyone who supports us, helps keep the show going. On to this week's episode. It is Lisa's Date with Density, episode 4F01, originally aired December 15th, 1996, written by Mike Scully, directed by Susie Dieter. Finished 63rd in the ratings, a Nielsen rating of 7.4, approximately 7.2 million viewing households. It was the fifth highest rated show on Fox that week, following The X-Files, Melrose Place, Beverly Hills, 90210, and Party of Five.
Oh, are we entering the Party of Five era already?
We are. I think we've mentioned them before, honestly. I think they had already been in the ratings at some
Oh,
point.
okay. Well,
Couch gag is I accidentally copy pasted the wrong thing, but I remember it was the couch is upside down. As soon as the Simpsons sit on it, they fall. It's fine. It's physical. Like, I'm fine anytime they just go back to simple physical humor. Like, I think that is always it always works, especially in such a short short bit. The episode begins with Superintendent Chalmers alarming Principal Skinner with news about his 1979 Honda Accord.
You know, I used to think a car was just a way of getting from point A to point B, and on weekends, point C. But that was the old me. That man died the moment I laid eyes on the 1979 Honda Accord.
I've always admired car owners, and I hope to be one myself as soon as I finish paying off Mother. She insists I pay her retroactively for the food I ate as a child.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. Well, Seymour, I make superintendent money, which amply covers both food and car. Holy jumping Caesar's catfish! My H has been stolen! Now, that's how people know it's a Honda! What's the point of having a Honda if you can't show it off?
Jumping Caesar's catfish.
I mean, there's some really good exclamations in this episode, I would say, from both Chalmers and Skinner. Homer. We after this we do see Skinner and Chalmers try and steal the Hyundai H from apparently what is Kearney's car. I mean, they are episode after episode they're really hammering in Kearney is an adult man.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I mean, he's driving a car and he has a child with him when he goes to
Well,
school.
is in one of the future episodes you have Kearney, his son, and his grandson all in the same class.
That's true. That is true. Homer. In the B plot, we follow Homer, kind of following Homer, and he, it's not really related to the plot, but I think it's hilarious because it involves him using candy as sprinkles on a donut.
Hey, morning, Apu.
Good morning. One donut with sprinkles? And wait a minute. These are not sprinkles, sir.
What do you mean?
You've clearly taken items from the candy rack and placed them on top of the donut in an attempt to pass them off as sprinkles.
Well, it was like there when I got here. It really was.
A Mounds bar is not a sprinkle. A Twizzler is not a sprinkle. A Jolly Rancher is not a sprinkle, sir. Perhaps in Shangri-La they are, but not here.
So, Matt,
definitely donuts. They're definitely sprinkles. I would definitely count them.
Sprinkler, a Twizzler is a Twizzler is a sprinkle. Is that you're literally
Absolutely.
saying that?
All candies count as donut toppings.
Even, I mean, I do have a problem with Homer using Jolly Ranchers as
Yeah,
a
that's
sprinkle because those are hard candies. Can't I need chewy sprinkled? I think that is wrong because one, it's not chewy. I think you could maybe talk me into saying like a chewy candy is a sprinkle.
Oh yeah, basically every chocolate bar ever is a sprinkle.
What if the chocolate bar is larger than the donut?
Well, then you cut it up. So, like, it's like Oreos. You crush some Oreos, you sprinkle them on top of a donut, you take a Snickers bar, you cut it up into little pieces, and you just sprinkle it on top of a donut.
But Homer used full Mounds, used a full Mounds bar.
Well, Mounds bar is tiny enough because, you know, it comes in two. So you take one of the little pieces and count that as one sprinkle.
What if it's a Mounds bar, the small size Mounds bar on a mini donut?
Ooh, once you get into mini donuts, all bets are off.
I don't know if I've ever seen mini donuts with sprinkles.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like the kind of thing that would fit really well with mini donuts. We'll have to ask Mr. Goodnight.
Yeah, I know. He is the expert on mini donuts. Homer, after getting rejected by Pooh, he sees the police apprehending a telemarketer, a scam artist, and they dump the auto dialer in the trash. Homer picks it up, of course, because why would you let that go to waste?
But auto dialers are very important and expensive. You can't replicate them in software very cheaply.
I mean, in 1996, Matt.
I know.
I'm not saying in 2017 you need to get like a tape-driven auto dialer with a literal phone jack on it. But in 1996, maybe, you know. And Homer, yeah. It's Homer anyway. He probably doesn't know what that technology is. It might as well be a spaceship.
That is a very good point.
Cut back to the class. Skinner is, of course, searching for Chalmers H. He, of course, goes to all the usual suspects. Bart's locker doesn't have the H in it. It does have various booby traps, the first of which is eggs, a dozen, thrown at your face.
You know, Bart has a lot of competition. He's got to make sure people aren't rooting around in his locker.
And he does warn him. To be fair, Bart says, yeah. Hey, don't watch out. Don't. And then Skinner goes in anyway. They go through all the other bullies. Finally, Nelson. Nelson's locker is seemingly completely empty until Skinner's banging opens up the secret compartment in which the H is in plain view, and a bunch of other stolen merchandise.
Principal's ransom worth.
Of course. He is forced to give everything back and apologize.
Who does Nelson think he's impressing anyway, acting so cool all the time?
Not me!
All right, Mr. Smartenheimer, that does it. First, you're going to give back everything you've stolen. Then I'm sentencing you to 1 week of the lowest, most degrading work known to man, janitorial work.
Oh, I'm standing right here, sir.
Ah, yes. Take a good look at him, Nelson, because that's where you're headed. After you claim your stolen merchandise, go directly to Mr. Muntz for an apology.
Bite me! Cram it! You're dead! Get bent, ma'am!
Why do you have to be such a pain all the time? Don't you realize you're getting a bad reputation?
Don't you realize your butt sticks out?
It does not! Hey!
Ha ha!
Yeah, I don't think butt sticking out's a bad thing, but, you know, whatever.
I mean, it varies person to person. Some people want their butt to stick out, some people don't. Nelson, not necessarily very, I don't know, he's not very sad about stealing all these things from people. He seems to not really be apologetic, would you say?
He has no remorse.
No, not really. I mean, this is a Nelson, I think the real first Nelson episode. I don't think Nelson is necessarily a very deep character, but I still like him a lot, and I find him very believable and oftentimes sad.
Yeah, if you ever go to a low-income elementary school, you'll definitely find kids like, you know, Nelson.
Yes, exactly. It is, like, this is the first time they show, like, why does Nelson act like this? And you're like, oh, that's why. They get into it. We cut back to Homer, who has taken the auto dialer home and is now set up his own telemarketing scam that Marge is a little worried about.
Let me show you how it works. This baby has every phone number in town programmed into it. It automatically calls them one by one and plays my message. Listen.
Ahoy, hoy.
Greetings, friend. Do you wish to look as happy as me? Well, you've got the power inside you right now. So use it and send $1 to Happy Dude, 742 Evergreen Terrace, Springfield. Don't delay. Eternal happiness is just a dollar away.
$1 for eternal happiness. I'd be happier with the dollar.
You say so, Mr. Burns.
A nice little
insight.
Give
me a dollar.
An insight into, yeah. Are you sending a dollar to Happy Dude, Matt?
Oh, absolutely. You can have my address. It's Happy Dude.
I was going to say...
I'll give you my PayPal account name.
I was going to say, if you are setting up a telemarketing scam, I would probably want to use your own address. Probably want to set up some kind of forwarding system to...
Yeah, we use Bitcoin for those kind of things. I mean, those people use Bitcoin. I wouldn't know anything about that.
Yeah, you wouldn't know anything about laundering money, would you, Matt?
Not at all.
Zero experience. Oh, not anymore. Good to know you've given it up. I think that, I don't know, we are often critical of B-plots that have literally nothing to do with the A-plot, but I feel like this B-plot is actually more than what it appears at surface level. I feel like it actually does a really good job at contributing to world building in this episode, and it makes me think of 22 short films. About Springfield.
That's true. Actually, sorry, quick tangent. I feel like a lot of the A-plots of Simpsons episodes from this season would fit in really well as B-plots that kind of expand the world of Springfield. So if you could cut them down to like 3 or 4 minutes and stick them in another episode, they'd probably work pretty well.
I think that, you know, we get glimpses of a lot of, like, using that telemarketing thing, like he's calling all those people, the machine right. is, we get glimpses into their lives. You know, we get a glimpse into Mr. Burns, who's like, would value a dollar. We get to see Grandpa and Jasper. We see the Flanderses. We see Frink. Right. We get to see all of them. And it's just a tiny, tiny bit. But it's one funny. Like, all those, every single one of those is funny and has a good bit of humor in it. And two, it adds to the feeling of totality in the world. I like it for that. And they do kind of weave them together just a tiny bit at the very end of the episode, not really in any meaningful way, but I feel like if a B-plot isn't going to be like directly related or intertwined with the A-plot in any way, I feel like it should do something like this. It should add something different than the A-plot isn't doing. The A-plot is like focusing mainly on Lisa and on Nelson. The B-plot is giving us something completely different, but also something very valuable.
And it should at least be funny.
It is, yes.
Which this is.
This is funny. You're right. We just came off of our new episode review. Could you tell? Lisa is, you know, Nelson is sentenced to helping Willie. A lot of good Willie humor in this, by the way. Multiple scenes of funny Willie interactions. And Lisa, while Nelson is helping Willie, Lisa is inside at music class, and she misbehaves.
And that's our Willie Waters. Now you take the hoose.
The moose?
The hoose! The hoose!
Is this right?
Ah! Turn off the noozle!
The noodles? What noodles?
The noozle at the end of the hoose!
Ah. Miss Simpson, do you find something funny about the word tromboner?
No, sir. I was laughing at something outside.
She was looking at Nelson.
Lisa likes Nelson.
She does not.
Millhouse likes Lisa.
He does not.
Jamie likes Millhouse.
She does not.
Una likes Millhouse.
Nobody likes Millhouse. Lisa, you've got detention.
I love how at the end there, because it's a chain, and then Janie somehow is left out, because Uter should like Janie, but instead Uter likes Milhouse, so.
But Matt, nobody likes Milhouse.
That's definitely accurate.
And especially in this
episode. As we'll find out.
Especially in this episode, no one likes Milhouse. Lisa gets sentenced to detention for, honestly, not that bad. Like, she's daydreaming and laughs to herself. Like, I don't, like... Not necessarily a like, I don't think that's detention worthy, honestly. I feel like...
Oh, no, this basically they're making fun of teachers from the 50s and 60s who were basically horrible taskmasters, and if you did anything outside, they would punish you.
Lisa sends to detention, but while she's in there, she has a little talk with Nelson, and he actually gives her very helpful advice about she has to write on the chalkboard, I will not be a snickerpuss, and... he tells her, like, yeah, use that 5 chalk dealy. It's much easier. And she gives in and does it. And she's like, wow, he was right. And she turns to look at him outside and is starting to realize something. Something maybe a little disturbing.
He's not like anybody I've ever met. He's like a riddle wrapped in an enigma wrapped in a vest. Sure, he's ugly, though. So why can't I stop staring at him? Oh, no! I think I'm getting a crush on Nelson Muntz.
Hey,
Hey, Willie! Catch the football!
All right, I'll...
I like the little, the reassuring happy musical sting there right after Lisa watches Willie catch a bee's hive or whatever.
Stung to hell and back.
Yeah, it can't be. That has to be awful. I can't. It's still funny. Like there's a lot of cartoonish violence in this. In particular, the upcoming scene with Milhouse and Nelson. And I don't know. It that one bothers me a little bit. I'd say but most of the stuff with Willie is like might as well be Wile E. Coyote. It doesn't really. Him and Homer both are like. You can inflict as much punishment you want to them, and it doesn't really mean anything.
That's a good comparison. Wile E. Coyote, I like it.
He literally, multiple times in the series, he rips open his shirt, and he has, like, a row of muscles. He is a fairly cartoonish character.
Wait, are you saying your high school janitor wasn't, like, jacked to the extreme, and you're pretty sure we're on steroids?
I can't remember anything about my high school janitor.
Oh, that's sad. Don't pay attention to little people, apparently. Remember that, everyone. Robbie does not pay attention to little people.
Matt, I was way too concerned with hating myself to worry about remembering
that's reasonable.
Remember anything else in high school aside from my own self-loathing. So, it doesn't excuse me forgetting. I think there were more than one janitor at our high school, but forgetting them. But you know, that is my excuse. With Willie catching the football, so to speak, we go to commercial.
And when we come back, Lisa is explaining to Milhouse how she feels about Nelson. Milhouse is, of course, incredulous because Nelson regularly beats the crap out of Milhouse. So he's very upset. But, you know, poor Milhouse, he obviously likes Lisa. And Lisa tries to break it to him gently that she doesn't feel the same way.
You like Nelson? But he's a creep and he chipped one of my permanent teeth.
But I bet underneath he's a sweet, sensitive person. Like you. I guess you could say I want to bring out the Milhouse in Nelson.
But I'm all Milhouse. Plus, my mom says I'm the handsomest guy in school.
I like you too, Milhouse, but not in that way. You're more like a big sister.
No, I'm not. Why does everybody keep saying that?
Would you do me a favor? When you get back to class, just give him this note.
No.
Please.
When she sees you'll do anything she says, she's bound to respect you. Sure, what's a big sister for? Oh, I shouldn't have said that.
Oh,
yes, poor Milhouse.
Oh, man, Milhouse.
Been there, buddy.
Some lessons to learn there, Milhouse. You gotta, like, that's, a lot of this episode is really, like, a lot smarter than I remember it, watching it. Like, it's really clever on all these different relationships and how they intersect and how they really do a good job of writing Lisa about and how about her feelings for Nelson and how she doesn't even really know why she likes him. Like she herself,
it happens to young people. Yeah, this whole thing, it probably wouldn't happen to elementary school students, but middle and high school students, if you ever liked anybody in those grades, you will probably be very familiar with how everyone in this situation feels.
Yeah, and they often write Lisa older than she actually is. You know, I don't think there's many 8-year-olds who have this kind of self-reflectiveness about why they... I mean, I can imagine an 8-year-old girl having a crush on someone, but I cannot imagine them having, like, the amount of insight and thoughtfulness about why they like something or someone. Milhouse is... He's a very pathetic in this episode, and it's kind of sad because I can actually, as you alluded to, I see some of my younger self in that sadness.
It's true. The two of us usually identify with Lisa. In this case, this episode, I'm all Milhouse all the way. That's that part, as it took until like midway through college for me to realize that.
Yeah, exactly. You're like a little too late to like you go, oh man, that was that. That's not good.
Nope.
I think it's a lesson to be learned. Don't be like Milhouse.
Yes. Whatever Milhouse does, you do the opposite.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say opposite, but yeah, maybe temper it down like 85%.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
In this case, however, Milhouse does as Lisa asks and gives Nelson a note, which is very poorly written, which is unlike Lisa, but it just says, guess who likes you, which everyone should be more straightforward with their feelings. That's just the way the world should work. But unfortunately, in this case for Milhouse, Nelson, of course, getting the note from Milhouse, gets the wrong impression and literally beats the crap out of poor Milhouse at the point where he's unconscious and they have to fill his ears with gauze.
That's a great line. Lisa's like, I'm so sorry. He can't hear you. I would argue that Lisa is relatively inexperienced in this kind of stuff. So
that's true.
She doesn't know how to flirt or show that she likes a boy.
As they're carting Milhouse away to the hospital, Lisa approaches Nelson and confesses that the note was actually from her. She immediately wants to know how Nelson feels, but Nelson, being a typical guy, doesn't really feel anything about this. He's like, "Oh, I'm okay with it.
Yeah,
I guess.
That's fine. I mean, okay, got it. I mean, Nelson is pretty. That's cool. He's not. He doesn't. I mean." It's a thing about him that they never like say it specifically, of course, and you kind of figure it out over the years, but obviously he's had a rough childhood and therefore shelters his emotions. It's not like it's crazy. Like, it's not confusing. Like, why he,
you know, it completely makes sense for his character.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. At this point, we cut away to Homer, who has received his first $2, as we said, from Grandpa and Jasper. He's showing, you know, the elderly and their propensity to give money to people they don't know for, hopefully, you know, happiness, I guess.
Jasper does feel happier, man.
That's true. He feels a little bit happier. Pills kicking in.
For a dollar, a little bit happier is fine. Like, if you ask me, like, if I gave you a dollar and I definitely would feel happier, I would definitely do it.
Yeah, that's probably true. I mean, that's like playing the lottery. You're happier until you lose.
Well, maybe you just hold a lottery that never ends, and then you're always happy.
You can hold a lottery until you die. At this point, Lisa invites Nelson over to the Simpsons to, you know, hang out the way kids do. Nelson is incredibly bored because Lisa tries to dress the cat up as a doll and put her in a stroller, which is, you know, typical little girl behavior.
I mean,
Nelson, however,
I mean, Matt, I mean, I have tried to put costumes on my cats before. So,
well, you did that as an adult. So it's a little,
that's what I mean.
Less acceptable.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I'm like, it's okay for a little girl to do that. I mean, I do it. I put a Yoda, try to put a Yoda costume and a dinosaur costume on Smokey.
Oh, on Smokey, you must have gotten really... That must have been a lot of blood loss involved.
No, she doesn't get violent. She just gets very obstinate about movement. she doesn't move. She sits...
Yeah, next time you're here, you can dress up our dog. She doesn't care at all.
What about Leo?
Leo does not like clothing in general. He's not like, he doesn't like go crazy, but he will try and get it off as soon as possible.
How about Leo coming to Canada?
No, absolutely not.
Oh, there's rabbits here. He could play with them.
Yes, play with them. That's what he wants to do.
They're as big as him.
So he would still attempt to kill them and drink the juices, the sweet, sweet rabbit juices. Back at the Simpsons household, Bart discovers that Nelson is his house. Is, of course, terrified because Nelson is a bully. And then, you know, Bart's around for a little bit.
You didn't get this, Matt? I thought you were going to get it.
No,
Matt, Bart's
sorry.
Reaction. Oh, Bart saying, I'm not going to say this often, but you can do better. That is, I Bart is barely in this episode, but that little kind of character bit where he's like, even he knows, like, yeah, my sister is smarter and better than Nelson. She can do better than this. Like, it's a very short thing, but it also contributes to the proposed perspective of like people seeing them together, and it, I think it adds, especially when you get Marge's perspective later on. I think having Bart's perspective along with Marge's, I like that dichotomy.
That's true. Bart has also already told Lisa that she's not ugly, so, you know.
Yeah, he's on the record.
He's on the record, yes. At this point, the auto dialer that Homer is using dials Professor Frink, who turns out invented it to alert children about snow days. So he apparently types in a secret code, which causes the thing to grow legs and roll away, but Homer is able to catch it and break the legs off. That's a very impressive auto dialer if it's got little remote control legs on it.
I like it. I like the little bit of Frank. I like that just like, hey, it makes it feel like a lived-in world. It makes it feel real. Like, yes, this thing had someone who made it, and it has a recall code on it, and it has a history. It's like in Rosebud when we see the teddy bear's travels. It feels like, yes. Hey, this auto dialer has been places. It's gone. It's had some time.
Indeed. At this point, however, Lisa goes over to Nelson's to reciprocate, and we get a very iconic conversation.
You're the first person I've had over to the house since my dad went nuts.
Nuke the whales? You don't really believe that, do you?
I don't know. Gotta nuke something.
Touché. You play the guitar?
Oh, yeah. I'm a superstar.
Would you play a song for me?
Oh, okay. Joy to the world, the teacher's dead. We barbecued her head. What happened to her body? We flushed it down the potty. And round it goes. And round it goes.
I wish I could laugh at the idea of a teacher being decapitated.
I know. It's funny, huh?
Hardly.
Listen, I'm getting pretty tired. I'm gonna go to sleep for a while. Smell you later.
How am I supposed to get home?
I don't know. You should have thought of that before you came over, huh?
So, yes, you got to nuke something, and Nelson with the surprisingly good chord progression there. He could have been a flamenco guitarist, I guess.
I mean, if you look at the posters on his room, he's actually pretty consistent with his nuking policy. Because he has a nuke the whales, he also has a nuke the Indians, and nuke the Arabs? Nukes the Middle East? Something like that. About taking oil from the Middle East and taking casinos from Indians is also on posters on his wall.
You know, more and more, I'm starting to think that the current Simpsons writing staff is really aiming for a grown-up Nelson. That's their target audience.
You're carrying too much. You gotta let that go, Matt. You gotta let that new episode go. You can't let it weigh on you.
No, it has scarred me forever.
You gotta throw it off and just forget it. Let it go in the past. It's okay. It's not your show. Your show's right now. We're talking about your show. Your show's going. We're talking about Lisa's date with Density. It's tremendous. I have been into this, like, I knew kids like Nelson. I have been in rooms that were exactly like this room, with the wood paneling and mess and no one home and crummy guitars.
Good old crummy guitars. Every kid should have one.
Are you telling me, Matt, I'm looking at notes, you have not pulled the Marge Lisa conversation?
I did not.
I'm also very upset about this. You can hear the anger in my voice. I don't know. Lisa gets picked up, and it's like, I absolutely love this conversation between her and Lisa. Like, it is not funny in the least. It's actually kind of disturbing
more than anything.
It's actually, yeah, it's kind of sad about Marge's, you know, Marge is delusional. Like, she thinks she's changed Homer. And I don't know. I don't think she's necessarily wrong. Like, I think Phil Homer, like, he's very committed to Marge. I don't know if that's necessary, if that counts as change in his behavior.
I feel like we have seen Homer in his single life before a couple of times, you know, in random setups that may or may not have actually happened. And Homer by himself is disgusting and not clean in any way. And at least Homer's kind of clean now. He usually wears clean underwear for the most part.
Yeah. And I mean, that is Marge's impact on him. But I think that I don't necessarily think Marge is like, I don't like episodes that completely paint Marge as like this crazy person who is stuck with this awful man. Like, I think in the end, I want to see, you know, there has to be some kind of redeeming qualities in Homer that is why she sticks with him. And ultimately, I in my head, that's what I think of. I think Homer ultimately is so innocent and committed to her is why she sticks with him. This discussion with Lisa, when she's like, you can change someone, and the people who say you can't are quitters. When you look at Nelson as a child and you think of like Lisa Nelson relationship and Marge and Homer relationship, like, I think there are times that Marge isn't sure why she loves Homer so much. And I try and think what the difference is between a Nelson and a Homer. And like, I think that's an interesting conclusion, like an interesting comparison. I think Nelson ultimately like doesn't have the same household that Homer had. Even Homer even had just Abe. Well, at least it is a parent.
Yeah, Abe and Mona, and then Abe. So he had some sort of family that was at least mildly supportive of him.
Yeah, and I think there is the Homer is less malicious in general than Nelson is, although we haven't, of course, seen all of Homer's childhood, so who knows. But I feel like that same kind of Lisa, you know, a theme in the whole show is both Lisa and Bart kind of learning from their parents' mistakes. As Marge and Homer learn to be good parents, we see Bart and Lisa kind of trying to learn and also teach their parents about the right thing to do. And I think in this episode, basically we're seeing Lisa learn that, you know, it's oftentimes better not to try and change someone. Like, ultimately, you can maybe affect change in someone. Marge isn't wrong, but I think Lisa is in the end learning not to do that, in that, you know, she's just going to get hurt a lot by.
Yes, you can make small bumps. You can't make 90-degree turns in a person's life.
You can inspire change. You can't.
Oh, sorry. Inspire change. You can't force change.
Yeah, you can't force change.
It's true. You can put a little pressure on the wheel. You can't turn it for them.
This is Self-Help Corner with Matt and Robbie.
Yes, that's true. The Simpsons are all about self-help. So at this point, Lisa is willing to keep trying with Nelson. She goes and she buys him a brand new outfit where he feels like punching himself. That's how good he looks. And then takes him out to their first date at the observatory, I believe, where they have a picnic. And Lisa starts off being Lisa and trying to talk to a little bit too much. And then Nelson stops her with her very first kiss.
Isn't it nice up here? What are you thinking, Nelson?
What am I thinking about what?
About anything.
Nothing.
What do you feel? What's inside you right now?
Guts and black stuff and about 50 Slim Jims.
Come on, Nelson, you must think and feel things. I mean, look where we are. A rolling green hillside, the stars coming out like God is lighting a million tiny candles. The moon looking down on us as if to say, my first kiss. I always wondered what it would be like.
This ought to shut her up. Hey, this isn't so bad.
And with that, they continue to kiss for a while. The music swells and we go to commercial.
Yeah, when we come back, they're still kissing. The kiss is ending as we come back.
A long kiss.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it lasted an entire commercial break. Nelson enjoyed the kiss. And I think we're getting, like, how old is Nelson?
I mean, I would assume he's probably 10. He's probably 10 or 11, probably a couple years too old to be in the fourth grade.
Yeah, I was going to say 12. Maybe 11.
It's a little old, but you know.
I don't know. Like, he's obviously much larger than everyone else in the class. And, you know, he certainly doesn't try hard at school. So, you know, he could be held back a year or two. But, you know, I think, you know, like a boy like Nelson, that is what he's going to go out of relationship. He's like, oh, I get to kiss a girl and it feels cool. It's nice. Like, I think I like that this, it doesn't make necessarily, like, it doesn't try and overcomplicate this. It makes it two kids, like, having a first kiss and their first real relationship. And even if you want to call it that, like, I don't know if they don't really ever are dating necessarily.
Right.
The other bullies, Dolph, Jimbo, Kearney, show up. And I absolutely love this conversation where they are upset with Nelson, who's quote unquote gay for hanging out with and kissing a girl.
Oh man, you kissed a girl. That is so gay.
Listen, you thugs, stop making fun of him or you'll be sorry.
Whoa.
You'll be so sorry when you realize how you've hurt the feelings of a sweet young man. He's not like you anymore. He's changed, and he doesn't want to hang around with a bunch of crumb bums.
Crumb bums? Nobody calls me a crumb bum!
Hey, back off, James. I'll handle this, Lisa. You go have a fig bar.
Hey, thanks for embarrassing me, dingus.
You asked for it, man. You're broadcasting geek rays over the entire valley.
Afraid not. I'm still wicked bad. Oh, yeah, then prove it, ass butt. Come raid Skinner's house with us.
We found a bunch of rancid coleslaw in the dumpster behind Krusty Burger.
Yeah, and we're gonna go heathen at his house.
Cool. I'd love to get even with Skinner. But I better not.
Chicken!
Lame-o!
Pants.
Charlatan!
You got rid of them, and you did it like a gentleman without any violence.
Yeah, I know you don't like that stuff.
It's kind of a sweet moment. At least at that moment, it's sweet.
It hasn't gone to hell yet.
No, it hasn't. And I think it is also a good insight into the pressure on Nelson, and it makes it feel real. It makes it feel like Nelson's a real character, which is, you know, I think that why we like the supporting character episodes a lot is because it fleshes them out, and it makes, by making them real, by giving them real desire and thoughts and stuff, it makes the entire show better. It makes every other episode with Nelson better because it gives us that insight. It fleshes him out in our minds. And when we see any other episode with him, we go, oh, yeah, right. Because we think about this episode and Bart on the Road and all those other moments where we see more than just him being ha-ha. Also, the humor, like, I can't, that nails preteen teenage boy calling their friend gay because they're not spending time with them, but instead kissing a girl. It is.
That makes total logical sense.
It is. It's just lovely. I've known so many boys, so many guys like that, who their default pejorative is gay, regardless of the situation, regardless of how logical it is. we cut back to Homer and the auto dialer, and I guess because Snowball 2 is sleeping on it, it is stuck on redial. It is calling the Flanderses over and over again.
Haddly diddly.
Greetings, friend. Do you wish to look
at... it was that darn recording again.
Of course it was. It's been calling all night. Just unplug the phone.
Haddly diddly.
Greetings, friend.
Bang.
I told you to unplug the phone.
But it could be my mother.
Greetings, friend.
Shoot.
That is it, Ned. If you don't unplug that phone right now, you're sleeping on the lawn.
Will you two shut up? People are trying to sleep.
I have a question for you, Robbie. Maybe you remember than I do. If someone kept calling your phone back in, like, say, the 80s or 90s, did you have any recourse? Like, could you, like, what would you do? Like, nowadays, I can block their number really easily. I go to Google Voice and I say, don't let this number through. But what could you do back then besides unplug your phone if someone just kept calling you?
I mean, I'm sure that you could, like, it depends. I guess it depends heavily on the context of a phone call. I imagine you could call the police, and if it's threatening, you know, if it's generally intimidating, and then you could eventually take start the very probably slow train of some kind of legal recourse. I don't think there is. I mean, I know that you could. I don't know how. I don't know when Star 69 started being a thing where you could, get people's numbers. I don't know when that happened, so in caller ID and all that. So I forget exactly. I think by 1996 you had caller ID and Star 69 if you paid for it. I don't.
Gotcha.
You couldn't do anything directly though. Maybe the phone company could block it if you told them to. I wonder. Maybe.
Yeah. Life just sucked back in the past.
Yeah. Technology makes things easier. I guess we don't really see Nelson and Lisa split up, but, you know, they probably just go to head home. And but Nelson takes a side trip, stops at Skinner's house, and helps the bullies just batter his house with rancid coleslaw, which was from 1994. So that's 2-year-old coleslaw at this point. I can't imagine.
That would be
that can't be
awful.
That'd be really
coleslaw
bad.
Coleslaw is bad enough when it's fresh.
You and my wife can't stand the coleslaw hating. Coleslaw is delicious.
Sorry, cabbage with mayo on it does not count as something that I want to put anywhere near my mouth.
If you think that's what coleslaw is, you're not making a coleslaw correctly. Because that's
what it tastes
like. That is not... Well, you're eating bad coleslaw then, because good coleslaw doesn't taste like cabbage with mayo on it. If, you know, there is mayo and there is cabbage.
Cabbage, carrots, mayo, and vinegar.
Again, too simplistic. You got to doctor up your coleslaw a little bit, Matt. Okay, first you need some pepper in there. Salt and pepper, simple seasoning is very important. Also, you need a little touch of sweetness. A little bit of sweetness to balance out the kind of bitterness of the vinegar. The vinegar certainly downplays kind of the tartness of the mayo, but you also need a little bit of sugar, a little bit of sweetness to balance out the bitterness of the vinegar and get a nice balance there. And low in carbs, you get your fiber with the cabbage, good for you.
If you say so. Still tastes like butt.
Okay, I'm not going to – I could continue to defend the values of coleslaw, but I won't. They moon Skinner and traumatize Agnes. I guess she's never seen a male butt before.
That'd be awful for her.
Maybe four at the same time. Maybe that was the problem. It's just
and they're probably not attractive butts because, you know, look at the bullies. They're not attractive people.
I mean, you can often divorce a butt's attractiveness from a person's attractiveness.
True, but and they're, even I don't know, in this case,
they're just they're. I don't know. She's. I think it's quantity of butts is the problem. She's overwhelmed. There's just too many butts. It's too many. Nelson runs to the Simpsons house to hide out. And tells Lisa lies to her and says they're accusing me of something I didn't do. They're just they're just targeting me because Skinner hates me. And she of course eats this up because she wants to believe. She wants to think that she's actually affected change in Nelson and that he really is the best he can be right now and that really is just society being unfair to him. The cops do arrive at Springfield at the Simpsons house, but is only to destroy the auto dialer with a gun, I guess. But
well, you know, that's Chief Wiggum. You know, when all you've got is a gun, everything looks like something that needs to be shot.
I mean, he does use it also to crack walnuts, so you know that's not too crazy. He makes a good point about how most police chiefs don't go out on patrol with the beat cops, and both Eddie and Lou are like, "Yeah, sorry, Chief. Thank you very much. We appreciate it very. It's a nice little touch of surrealism in this."
They say that they ignored the call about the coleslaw to go to find the auto dialer.
There's only one of them. I mean, there's only so many of them. They can't do everything. You know,
You can't split up cops.
Yeah, you know, we can't do that. You never split the party, Matt.
Of course not. That'd be foolish.
That'd be foolish. They go up to the observatory, I guess, to hide out. I don't know why they couldn't, like, the cops weren't there for them, so I don't know why they couldn't just hold out in Lisa's bedroom. But it's a nice spot, and it harkens back to their date earlier in the night. And Lisa actually, but Nelson has a slip of the tongue, and Lisa discovers that he did indeed lie to her.
I thought you weren't there.
Huh? Oh, yeah, I guess I was.
You lied to me.
Nuh-uh.
There, you did it again.
All right, I lied. I'm sorry. Let's kiss.
No, you don't understand, Nelson. A kiss doesn't mean anything if it's dishonest.
There's, niceness to it.
I was foolish to think I'd actually changed you. Maybe I was seeing things in you that weren't really there.
Definitely.
Then why did you want to be with me?
Maybe because you were the first person that ever thought there was a nice guy inside me? Huh. Well, guess you really blew that one, huh?
Well, I guess this is it.
You mean, like, goodbye?
Let's just call it smell you later.
Oh, smell you later.
Smell you later. It is a little bit of a sad touch, a little bit somber. But, I mean, I think I really appreciate that. It's like Lisa just going, I was wrong. And admitting that she's wrong and not being like, no, she sees, I think, she's taken in what Marge told her and what she sees in Nelson. And she understands that ultimately this would be worse for her. And maybe sometimes you do like people and you don't know why. And you don't need to necessarily pursue that even if you do like someone. It's not necessarily, sometimes you have to put your own self-worth and health and put that first. Self-care is important, Matt.
Well, that's true. It absolutely is.
Lisa walks home and crosses. It's morning now. The sun is rising and Milhouse is walking. We ever have a name for that dog?
No, I don't think so. I don't. I mean, he kind of looks like Puppy Goo Goo, but Puppy Goo Goo was fake, I think.
I want to say we see that dog, that little tiny frou-frou dog again somewhere, but I can't remember if they ever name it. But Melissa's is walking the dog, sees Lisa, and asks her to talk, if he can talk to her without getting beat up by Nelson.
Hi, Lisa. Could I talk to you, or will that just make Nelson wail on me again?
Don't worry. Nelson and I don't like each other anymore.
Really? You got anybody in mind for your next crush?
Well, I'm really not thinking about that now. I suppose it could be almost anybody.
Yes!
Oh, Milhouse. Oh, buddy. You're...
A little bit of hope is all he needs.
Yeah, I guess so. I think it would have been better at that point if Lisa would have been just mean to him. I think it might have... I don't know. Milhouse is a sad, sad boy. The end shot is him, a freeze frame of him in the air with the poor dog behind on a leash, also pulled into the air. But however, over the credits, we also get what comes out of Homer having to go to court for his auto dialer.
Hello, this is Homer Simpson, a.k.a. Happy Dude. The court has ordered me to call every person in town to apologize for my telemarketing scam. I'm sorry. If you can find it in your heart to forgive me, send $1 to Sorry Dude, 742 Evergreen Terrace, Springfield. You have the power.
And that's it.
And that's the end. So, if you're sorry and you accept Homer's apology, you send him a dollar.
Yeah, exactly. If you accept Homer's apology, you give him one additional dollar. It's a nice, little joke. I always like when they do audio gags over the end credits. I feel like this episode is more than the sum of its parts.
It really is. Somehow, you wouldn't think it is because you have a B plot that has almost no connection to the A plot, but somehow it just seems to fit. It has the same, I guess, whimsy or whatever you want to call it.
I think that they do vaguely interweave when Nelson is coming to the Simpsons house because he walks directly underneath Homer and Flanders yelling at each other. But there's no direct connection, other than the cops. I mean, they do weave it with the cops coming in, but they're actually after the auto dialer. Like, that's a slight touch there. But I like what they do with Nelson in that they flesh him out believably and give him a character that they really capture what it's like to be a young boy in a relationship with this girl that, you know, and he himself is not sure what he's doing. And, you know, our point of view is really Lisa. You know, we're not seeing things from Nelson's perspective. We're seeing it from Lisa's perspective. And we get all her insight and thoughts about it, and we're really only seeing what Nelson is doing. And I think it's a good choice. I like, you know, it's not, they've done other side character episodes like Principal Skinner in particular, where he is actually the point of view character for most of the episode. And this is Lisa. It's an episode about Nelson through Lisa's perspective, and it does a good job because, you know, Nelson, if we judge him on his behavior alone, he is a bully. He is a jerk. You know, he steals stuff from people's cars and from just students, and he beats up Milhouse, and he lies to Lisa. He throws coleslaw at people's houses. None of that's defensible. But because we see it through Lisa's perspective, she is trying so hard to see the best in him, trying to see something good inside of him, something redeemable. And it lets us see Nelson in that lens and lets us into her perspective and colors him as ultimately a redeemable and like character that you can root for, even though he does a lot of kind of crummy things.
It's true. I mean, that's just how it works with Nelson. You really have to look past that. There's actually a lot of episodes where you get a little glimpse into what makes Nelson. I mean, we just did Bart on the Road, probably less than 20 episodes, and you get the idea that Nelson is more than he appears on the surface. Unfortunately, that surface is, let's call it unvarnished, because of his poor upbringing. And you get a lot of mileage out of jokes at that at his expense, but when he's in the episode for more than, you know, 2 or 3 minutes, it usually ends up being something pretty funny.
Yeah. Also, this episode is very funny. It has a lot of really good gags in it, good jokes, especially like and the character-based jokes, honestly. You know, really good humor that's like, there's a lot of, they mine a lot of the humor is in the B plot. They also, they put a lot of stuff, you know, on the character-based jokes between Nelson and Milhouse and Lisa's relationship. Like, I think it is a lot of rooted in character stuff, not just like, hey, random gag. The random gags is, you know, they do write random gags in it, but it makes sense in context of the B-plot.
Indeed.
We will rank it at the end of the show. No submissions for this for my favorite episode, but if you do have a favorite episode, please submit it. Why is your favorite? To SimpsonsShowPod@gmail.com. And when we get to that particular episode, I will read your answer on air. Next up, Matt, it is time for comments from the news group.
Okay, here we are. Alt.nerd.obsessive.
Comments from the news group is where I comb through the old alt.tv.simpsons news group and see what people are talking about a week or two after an episode debuted. Good reviews. Everyone likes this one.
Which is unusual because it's a really good episode. So usually you have at least a few stragglers who hate those.
I don't know. I think this is, again, like most of the episodes that are character based are kind of evergreen. Like, it doesn't matter what kind of Simpsons you like. If you like the Simpsons and you're like, you know, if you like episodes that are just about the family and related characters, any of them, even like ones that are written in season 4 or season 8 or season 17, if they are, you know, they are character-based plot and story and written through that lens and that perspective, they're generally good forever. Like, they're not going to feel too dated because there's always stories about, you know, people's first kiss. Like, that's always, everyone has that story. Everyone has their own first kiss. It's always relevant. I don't know. A lot of people really liked it.
Well, good for them. They're right for once.
For once?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's it. Nothing really newsworthy on the forums. Some people trying to tell everyone that The Simpsons are going to get canceled in the middle of the season, right in before sweeps week. Makes perfect sense, right? No, they're just...
That's always when they cancel TV shows, is right before sweeps week.
Yeah, they're trolling. There's some early internet trolls. But other than that, nothing really memorable. We can jump over to our next segment. It's time for the listener question of the week.
Let's try one more number.
Yellow?
KBBL is going to give me something stupid.
Well, hot dog, we have a wiener.
Yellow?
The listener question of the week this week is, what is your favorite romantic moment from the show? A sweet one. I always like the sweet questions because it makes me nice and warm and fuzzy inside when I'm going through the answers.
Aww.
It's not like, what is the grossest thing the Simpsons have done? What's the worst thing Homer's ever done? Etc., etc. What's the worst? It's always...
Those just make you feel bad on the inside.
It does. And sometimes, you know, you want to feel nice. So you get nice answers. I appreciate everyone who takes the time to respond. I really appreciate it. I want to point out, I think I mentioned multiple times before, but I want to mention again, Matt and I often record on Thursday or Friday. So if you want to have a better shot at getting your answers heard, answer before then. I try and post stuff earlier in the week, and if you get stuff to me earlier, I will generally see it, it will have a somewhat better chance of making it. First, from Mitch, Marge, damn it, where's that card? What card? I wrote down what I was going to say on a card. Stupid thing must have fallen out of my pocket. Is this it? What's it say? Marge, from the first moment I saw you, I never wanted to be with anyone else. I don't have much to offer you except all my love. Will you marry me? That's the card. Give it here. it's great. From Darren, I'm going to the backseat of my car with the woman I love, and I won't be back for 10 minutes. Also great. From Ken, I like Homer and Marge sitting in the car singing along to You Light Up My Life. Felt like a natural sweet moment between two people who really love each other. Teresa, the whole episode of Grade School Confidential, specifically where Miss Krabappel makes Skinner dinner and they make out with a Charlie Brown candle burning in the background. David, his answer, as a father of four, romantic simply means no children. Therefore, oh boy, a pup tent. Now I could sleep in the yard. Yeah, every single night. From John, I've got a problem. Once you stop this car, I'm going to hug you and kiss you, and then I'll never be able to let you go. This takes all the cake. From Drew at Mr. Drew Nichols, the end of Colonel Homer, awesome transition out with the hat, too. It's true. Lauren at Italia Princess, oh, Margie, you came and you gave me a turkey on my vacation away. Oh, Margie. Such a cute song showing the dopey love Homer and Marge have. I even sang. There's a little tease, guys. Tease for the end of the season. because Matt's going to lose and he's going to sing. Amanda at Drawn to Insanity, Homer's onion engagement ring to Marge, didn't need a ton of money to show that he loved her. Will at Will's World MN, once you stop this car, I'm going to hug you and kiss you and I'll never be able to let you go. Finally, from Kyle, the dinner scene with Skinner being impressed by Edna's applesauce is both funny and sincere. You can tell these people are seeing something special in one another. That said, the more romantic scene in the episode comes when they are dancing in the spotlights in the cafeteria. Nice visual, and both characters seem truly happy in that moment despite their situation. What's your answer, Matt?
I'm going to have to agree with, I believe it was John. I've got a problem. Once you stop this car, I'm going to hug you and kiss you, and then I'll never be able to let you go. I'm pretty sure I've said that to my wife at least a couple times.
Oh, how sweet. My answer, I tip my hat, Mitch's, the engagement card in I Married Marge. It is extremely romantic, extremely on character, and it is also very funny. It's a nice punchline in with the romance. Next week's question is, what is your favorite moment with the bullies involved?
Ooh, that's going to be a tough one.
So primarily Dolph, Jimbo, Kearney. We've done them. I'm fairly certain we've done a Nelson question before, but I don't think we've asked anything about Dolph, Jimbo, Kearney. I have in mind that they're a unit, but if you have something special with one of them in particular, I'm not necessarily going to exclude it. So, you do you. I post this question on all our social media, facebook.com/TheSimpsonsShowPod, on Twitter @SimpsonsShowPod, and you can email us at SimpsonsShowPod@gmail.com. Matt, speaking of you losing and having to sing,
oh no,
it is time for the No Google Trivia Challenge.
I am too smart. I am too smart. S-M-R-T. I mean S-M-A-R-R-T.
The No Google Trivia Challenge is where Matt and I each challenge each other with three trivia questions. One easy, one medium, one hard. Try and stump the other. The winner at the end of the season gets to pick a song. The loser has to record themselves singing on tape. We don't use tape anymore. On
record in some audio format,
in video audio. We need, there's has to be video.
Oh, video,
not
oh,
just
great.
Audio. Yeah, there's gonna be video involved. There's, it's performance. It's important that you are currently only winning by 10 points. It's, a very short margin. I'm certainly gonna come back and win this one. I'm sure. No chance of me losing a fourth straight trivia contest. That there's no trend there. Nope. What's my easy question?
All right, sir. Today, your easy question. In I Am Furious Yellow, what is Bart's comic about Homer?
Angry Dad?
You are correct, sir.
Hey, got a point. It's little small things, Matt. Sometimes you got to take joy in very small things. Your questions are all from a very particular episode from season 11, titled Take My Wife's Sleaze.
Oh, I remember this
one. The biker episode. Your easy question, what is the name of the motorcycle group formed by Homer and Pals?
The Hell's Satans. Them and the other biker gang.
That is correct. You are correct. What's my medium question?
All right, sir. Your medium question today. What Marvel character does Stan Lee try to convince Database to buy in the comic book store?
It's not real. Is it a real character? I don't think it's a real character, right?
It is a real character. Oh. I will give it to you.
Okay, yes. It is a real character.
Database wants to buy Batman, but Stan Lee would prefer to buy.
Oh, I mean, I know a lot of Marvel characters, so I can just at least guess one and not be. I can't be too far off. I don't think it'd be an obvious one. It'd probably be a weird one because Database would probably know about all the obvious ones. I guess that's assuming a lot about Database's character. I think Matt Groening has gone on record and said that Database is his least favorite character. I don't know why. I probably just because his name is Database. I can't really think of. I'm going to say Moon Knight because he is a Batman analog.
I'm sorry, is the Thing.
Oh, dang it.
He tries to force the Thing into the Batmobile and destroys it.
Oh, right. Oh, I forgot. Oh, man, I can't believe I forgot that. Okay, your medium question. I have a cat's head literally right in front of the computer screen, making it a little difficult to operate. All right. The real Hell Satans, which you alluded to in the answer to the first question, are led by two characters. Who are they?
Meat Hook is one.
Okay.
The other one is Marge is doing laundry for them. Ramrod? Rod? Some Ram?
What was that?
I'm going to go with Ramrod. I'm going to go with Ramrod or something.
Okay, what are the names?
Ramrod. That's one of them. Meat Hook and Ramrod.
That is your final answer.
Yes.
You are correct. I hate you.
Oh, whew. Oh man. I do not remember that episode as well as I should.
Pulling things out of your butt is what you're doing. I hate you. What's my hard question?
All right. In I Am Furious Yellow, what is Bart's original comic before he moves on to Angry Dad?
I don't know. I don't know whatsoever. I have no idea. I haven't seen that episode in a long, long, long time. It is El Barto.
Is that your final answer?
Yeah, that's a guess. That's a wild guess.
I'm sorry. It is Danger Dude.
I figured it'd be incredibly generic. All right, your hard question. Who voices Meat Hook and Ramrod, respectively?
Oh God, I know John Goodman does Meat Hook.
You'd have
to kill like 50 people. I have no idea who does Ramrod.
That's the memorable one. No guess? Give me a guess.
Who does Ramrod? I don't think I can even remember Ramrod's voice. I'm going to go with...
guess a name.
Ray Romano.
No, you're incorrect, Matt. It is Henry Winkler.
Henry Winkler, of course, the Fonz.
The Fonz. Ray Romano did voice a later character named Ray, who was visible only to Homer for most of the episode.
Right, yeah, I know.
I really like that episode, actually. That's a weird episode.
It's one of the few good ones in season 11.
But, unfortunately, that still puts you ahead of me this week. I don't like that. Why are you doing this to me, Matt?
I'm sorry, man. Promise I'm not trying that hard.
Thank you. That makes me feel better. I do have some bonus questions for you. These are all based on musical numbers, upcoming musical numbers even. These are from John Winchester. Let's see. The first one is from The Last Temptation of Crust. Name all the features and facts of the Canyonero based on the lyrics of the song.
Oh, God. It's four-wheel drive. It's seats 45. It's long and mean. That's all I can remember.
Okay. Again, Kat, you cannot be zooming in on my control, on my keyboard. That is not helpful. I need to read this. Cats,
y'all.
Here we go. Can you name the truck with four-wheel drive? There you go. Smells like a steak and seats 35.
35, shoot.
When it goes real slow with a hammer down, it's a country fried truck endorsed by a clown, Canyonero.
Canyonero.
12 yards long, 2 lanes wide, 65 tons. So weighs 65 tons of American pride. It's top of the line in utility sports, unexplained fires, matter to the courts. Blinds everybody with a super high beam, squirrel squishing, deer smacking, driving machine, Canyonero.
There you go.
Those are all the facts. And we have a couple more questions. From The City of New York versus Homer Simpson. What is the full title of the Broadway musical Marge, Bart, and Lisa see while in New York City?
Kicking It, a musical tour through the Betty Ford Center.
You are correct. You're so good, man.
Ooh.
How many pages of criminal charges is the criminal guilty of?
Wait, in that play?
Yeah, in the musical.
10-page confession.
You're correct.
Ooh.
What are the charges the criminal confessed to on page one?
There's murder and mayhem and exposure indecent. There's another triplet, but I can't remember what it was.
Freaked out behavior, both chronic and recent. Drinking and driving, narcotics possession. Those are the...
Oh, so there's two more. Whoa, goodness me.
Finally, last question. Who does Lisa claim is being strapped down towards the end of the musical number?
Liza Minnelli.
That is correct. Oh, man.
I'm sorry. I know I disappointed you today.
I know. You only got one wrong. How dare you? Now Matt is up 12 points with, like, 20 episodes to go. I obviously am not out of it. I can come back anytime. You know, I'm just holding back. I just feel pity on Matt. You know, he doesn't get enough out of life, and I just want to give him something. So this is my way. We can move on to our final segment. The segment we end every single episode with. It's time for Best Episode Ever.
Best Episode Ever.
Best Episode Ever is the part show. Matt and I rank the episodes categorically as we watch them chronologically, eventually compiling a list of every episode ever and how good they are. You have any idea about this one, old Matt?
I like this episode, so I'm going to say it's at least in the top 30, I think.
I agree with that. I would say top 30.
Okay.
I think that's... So let's look here. I would say it's... I don't know. It's It's a very, I think it is more than a sum of its parts. I think that it, in total, like the more I think about it, the more I appreciate it. I would say, okay, well, we just did Bart After Dark. It's fresh in our minds. Is it better than Bart After Dark?
Bart After Dark. Bart After Dark has the song.
It does have a song. You are right. It does have a song.
But that Lisa Marge subplot is pretty weak, whereas the subplot in this one is quite a bit better and more interesting. I'm going to say it's better, but not a ton better.
Okay, well, right after that is Mother Simpson.
Yeah, it's not better than Mother Simpson. And I really like this episode, but no. When you're talking about character work, which this episode, you know, goes on.
I think this episode is funnier than Mother Simpson.
I don't know.
I don't think Mother Simpson is that funny. I think it is particularly special, especially because of that ending moment. I think the character stuff in it is good, and that ending moment is top of the line, spectacular, one of the best endings of any episode ever. But that is why it's that high. I don't think it's particularly funny. I think this, for a character based episode, I think it is very funny.
Yeah, you're probably right. I generally do enjoy the funnier ones.
And then above that is In Maggie Makes Three. Again, another very heavy character thing, but again, I think emboldened by its ending,
We can keep going this direction, but it's never going to beat Lemon of Troy for funny. Sorry. I mean, this episode is funny, but it's not as funny as Lemon of Troy.
I'd agree that it's not as funny as Lemon of Troy, but I think it has much better character in it than Lemon of Troy. Another episode that features Nelson, actually.
That's true.
I think this is a better episode than Lemon of Troy.
Oh, but Lemon of Troy is so great.
I agree, but I think this episode has some of what is so special about Lemon of Troy, and then more.
I don't know. I mean, next up you have Lisa the Vegetarian, which is very much like this episode, but with Homer instead of Nelson. So I definitely cannot go any higher than Lisa the Vegetarian. Sorry.
I think it's better. My foot down there. I think it's better than Lisa the Vegetarian.
No, there's no way. Lisa the Vegetarian is just as funny, if not more.
I don't agree with that. It's funnier. I think this is funnier than Lisa the Vegetarian.
I don't understand why you think this episode is so funny. It's funny and in certain spots, but it's not like rip-roaringly made me laugh till I couldn't handle it funny.
I don't think Lisa the Vegetarian has anything like that in there either.
No, it's true, but I feel like the jokes are more consistent.
I think Lisa the Vegetarian's a little dated.
Yeah.
Paul and Linda McCartney with the vegetarianism on the roof and the you know, it's a little preachy.
A little bit, but, you know, nothing major. Where would you put this?
I was waiting to see. I really was just pushing to see how far I could get it up before you asked me. I would say right below A Fish Called Selma. I put it 18.
18 All right, let me think. Lisa the Vegetarian. It's got the little lamb asking why she's eating her and the hot dog joke.
Lisa the Vegetarian's a good episode. Don't get me wrong. All these are good episodes. Where I think this episode belongs is there, and I'm going to try and push you as hard as I can to get it there, and, you know, we'll see where you break.
All right, I'm going to say 19. 22 Short Films About Springfield is a really good episode. I think this one is better because of the character work. 22 Short Films, obviously, you can't get a lot about individual characters. But Bart the Fink is actually a good, similar episode to this that I think is actually more interesting because you've got Bart, you've got Lisa, you've got Krusty, you've got the intrigue, and you've got a little bit about what makes Krusty tick in the same way that you have, you know, what makes Nelson tick in this one. And honestly, I just find Krusty a more interesting character.
I'll take it. I could keep arguing, but I'm not going
to. Wearing me down.
I was going to like that one. I mean, that's... If you had not stopped me to ask where I put it, Matt, I would have just kept going up and up and up and up.
Yeah, I know.
I would have gone like, well, I think Bart's comet is really good, but, you know, Cape Fear's great, but Lisa's Date with Density has Nelson in it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Lisa's Date with Density, number 19. I have a soft spot for this episode. I really like it. I have lots of, this is a lot, like, I think overall quality season 8 isn't necessarily the highest, because recently you have put several episodes pretty low, relatively lower on the list, but the ones I like in season 8, I really like. And one of them, Matt, is next. What's our next episode?
Oh, you're going to make me go look it up now, aren't you?
I can tell you, I know what it is.
Oh, you do you? You know that it's Hurricane Nettie?
It is Hurricane Nettie. My favorite Flanders episode.
Yeah, I can't think of any of that that are better for Flanders.
It's a great Flanders episode, and I'm excited to talk about it. So, new 19 on our list is Lisa's Date with Density. New number one, not new, still number one on our list is Cape Fear. Still last place is Homer's Odyssey at even 150. You take out Tear House of Horrors and you take out Clip Shows, this is where you're at. It will be supplanted at some point. You can find this list. I updated it. It's current on our website, SimpsonsShow.com. Links to everything there. To our Facebook, Facebook.com/this. No, I already did that. Links to our Facebook, links to our Twitter, links to our RSS feed, links to our Patreon. If you want to help keep the show going, we'd obviously appreciate that. And links to every single episode, downloadable and streaming. Before we go, you can find me on Twitter at MixMasterCereal. That's MixMasterCereal. Please check out my other podcasts. Handsome Boys Comics Hour. It's about comic books. The other one is The Serial Fanaticist. It's Fanatic, I-S-T. That's how you spell it. Last episode was about WrestleMania. Oh, yeah, brother.
Oh, yeah.
There you go. That was more Kool-Aid Man than Macho Man.
It was, you know, in between.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, the Macho Man, Randy Savage, ooh, yeah. I can't imagine, I don't know how he managed to train his voice to do that all the time, because that just rips up my voice.
It destroys it.
But check out that stuff. Matt does not participate in social media. Unless you're a certain level of Patreon backer, you will not find him.
That's true, but you will find me ripping up the noobs in the Andromeda multiplayer. So if someone charges in at Novas and then throws you away, that's probably me.
I thought it was. Is there PvP in that? I thought it was all PvE.
No, it's not. It's a joke.
Okay. I've
all co-op.
I was gonna say it's you know, you're all on the same team. Horde mode, essentially.
Yeah.
With that we can call it a day. I'm Robbie.
And I'm Matt.
And keep watching those episodes.
Shh.